Welcome to Integrated Infrastructure, a podcast that brings you news and views from industry leaders involved in the developing, designing, constructing, and managing the many built forms that comprise Australia's integrated infrastructure. I'd like to acknowledge the Gadigal people as traditional custodians of the land on which we recorded this podcast. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and future, and recognise their continuing connection and contribution to this land. I'd like to extend that respect to Aboriginal people listening to this podcast. My two guests today are Ian Robinson, CIO at Walter New South Wales, and Carl Goff, founder and CEO of Meet Magic. We'll be talking about the impact of the metaverse on the future of infrastructure and the interesting way Meet Magic connects executives with vendors through purpose-driven conversations. If you have any questions or want to discuss any of these topics in more detail, don't hesitate to reach out. Right, let's get into it. Gentlemen, welcome to Integrated Infrastructure Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today. And I'll just start off by saying this is a slightly different podcast for us today from our normal infrastructure focus. Although we are infrastructure, we've also got something else very interesting to talk about. As always, we'll start the podcast by asking you to introduce yourself. So Ian, why don't we start with you?
Sure. I'm Ian Robinson, the CIO of Water New South Wales, which is a water utility, you could say. We build the dams and structures that control the water flows in the state, and basically all rivers that are, you know, managed are what we do for a living.
Fantastic. Carl?
And I'm Carl Goff. I'm the founder and CEO of the world's first generous unicorn called Meet Magic.
Fantastic. And we'll find out more about Meet Magic in a bit. But let's start with you, Ian. And I'm always interested by people's careers. It's what I do. And it'd be a bit weird if I wasn't. But you are CIO of a major water utility firm. But you your career started off as an engineer in telecoms. Can you give us some idea about your background and how you've come to where you are today?
Sure. As you said, telecommunications engineering. I mean, in my day, that was electrical, basically.
Yeah.
The opportunity to specialise came after you left uni, really. And so my first job was in the railway, working on communications networks, supporting rail control systems in particular. Mm-hmm. And in those days, they had everything from magnetophones that you wound up or fibre optic networks up the North Coast, mm-hmm. and microwave systems and that sort of stuff, increasingly into radio systems and then wayside systems, which I think really started my focus and interest, if you like, on Internet of Things or measurement of the physical world in a digital way. Mm. And obviously that requires communications networks to connect the physical sensor to something that collects the data. Mm-hmm. And moved on then to a telco and then to a career in IT, through joining DuPont, so a US multinational, lots of focus on many different countries connecting them together, but started to learn about data centers and managing infrastructure. Mm. And then with utilities for the last couple of jobs, Endeavour Energy, which is a electricity utility, a distributor. Mm. So very much focused on the use of smart grids, if you like, an overlay of the digital topology, if you like, of the physical topology of that network, and trying to build a picture of that for our operations teams, our asset teams, to understand the state of the asset and the work that was being done on it, increasingly identify defects remotely rather than through visual inspection, and use monitoring tools to capture information that gave people situational awareness. Mm. And then brought that more recently into Water New South Wales, and really doing the same thing, except we're applying it to waterways and rivers and pipelines, and understanding that natural ecosystem of where water is at any time. We've been through floods recently, before that, drought, and so it's a very dynamic system, not easily controlled by humans, but we're at the mercy of the climate, and as climate changes, increasingly need to find ways to optimise the use of water.
And I mean, you've touched on a few things there, but the changes that you've seen in technology through the years, and maybe more in the more recent years, it's been pretty incredible. We talked about it before the podcast, didn't we?
We did. And I mean, I think the biggest shift I've seen is in the ability to take data and real time, plenty of it, from more and more low cost sensors, because it used to be very expensive to install monitoring solutions. lots of infrastructure required, power. Now it's lightweight, it's battery driven, it's solar, or it's independent, if you like, of location. And the comms networks are now more ubiquitous and are able to be supporting the flow of data. And then I think what's really changed the game is the analytics capability in the cloud, which provides us with a platform for innovation at one level. At another, the ability to just scale it almost without limit. And the ability to apply artificial intelligence to gain insight out of that data. The challenge for all utilities in the past has been lots of fragmented data sources, no real ability to stitch it together and to provide a full picture of what's going on in the environment, and then to provide insight for people to make better decisions. And in the future, automate decisions so that humans are really restricted to things that require that judgment and level of capability that only humans can bring.
So what are the things that you don't know now that these insights would create that would improve a business like yours?
Well, I think right now we're very focused on the recent events with floods where, you know, the consequence for people downstream of a flooding river can be destruction of that town, like in Lismore. And the need to give people insight and heads up on that days before it actually happens rather than the last few hours when they're sitting on their roofs going, can I escape this? But then in the longer term, being able to forecast what crops you should grow, where we could best put cotton in the environment, how local towns can survive through long-term droughts and what the drought resilience sources can be and how we manage the water that's available through those periods are all things that require predictive analytics and insight into what history tells us is going to happen in the future along with what's actually happening in the climate and the environment at the moment.
I'm so happy you touched on those areas, because so often when we talk about technology and we talk about the advantage in those things, everybody's thinking about the city and about, you know, connected cities and, you know, data flying everywhere, what have you. But actually, the real world uses of technology out in agricultural environments or you know in remote areas is that really is game changing. You know, the pace of change there compared to what it would be in a more urban environment is enormous, isn't it?
Absolutely. I had a very basic understanding of agricultural tech, ag tech, when I first joined Wood New South Wales, and have found the phenomenal thinking of farmers, much more than what you know, kind of have as the persona, if you like, of a typical farmer, is very much they're now very land aware. They're conscious of the cycles of the climate, and also their responsibility to look after the land they've got for the future, rather than just cut down all the trees and expand their land area and grow more crops. And I think increasingly also an awareness of the impact on the environment from their operations. How do they reduce the fertilizer they're using? Not just because it costs a lot, but because they're trying to make the land available for future generations and consider the downstream impacts of fertilizer or other pollutants into waterways that affect other users. And increasingly we're understanding First Nations, you know, kind of ownership of the waterways as well, and they're our obligations as a community to every user, the environment, the people who need to keep the food supply running, small townships which are, you know, gone through these waxing and waning periods through COVID as we've seen people do tree changes. And so cities are still important and they'll never disappear from the criticality of, you know, how Australians operate. We're very coastal. But increasingly the water cycle needs to contemplate a broader spectrum of how we get water from one place to another and use it optimally.
Yeah, I was even having a conversation with a chap not that long ago who's in the private equity space in agriculture, and the ability for them to make better investment decisions now because of technology in those environments. And of course, yeah, water is obviously a really important part of that.
It's a critical part of life.
Yeah. Funny that, isn't it? Yeah. Absolutely. The other thing that I noticed on your LinkedIn profile, that I had a good look at, you've done some quite big transformation roles as well, which I thought were quite interesting. I'm always interested, and I've done a couple of big IT roles or tech roles with a services provider recently, is the way that infratech
builds into bids and work winning and that side of things. It's not an afterthought. It's right there front of center and at the forward, at the front of major projects now.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, a couple of things to comment on there. One is when you're building infrastructure, it's been a very traditional, almost bereft of technology landscape. And increasingly, I think we're learning that, firstly, in the infrastructure we build, we need to build in technology to it so we can manage it better in the longer term. So the construction method now is contemplating the inclusion of smart monitoring control environments that change the way and optimise that infrastructure is operated. In the construction itself, we're starting to learn that the building information management system, the transformation, if you like, of the design process itself, enables us then to better maintain the environment, but also make better design decisions and do simulations of options and alternatives for how that infrastructure could be built. And we're seeing that in manufacturing, the design of cars or phones or whatever, where digital technology is no longer the tool you use to do the design. It's now the tool you use to, you know, imagine different designs and simulate alternatives and provide really smart ways for engineers to contemplate a transformational way of building a product. I think the other aspect of it, I think, is utilities are regulated monopolies, and so we're driven by the regulator to improve our efficiency. And so transformation in our language generally means what are we doing to optimise our costs? How are we taking people out of the equation? How are we doing things better? And to do that, increasingly we're seeing the power of automation in technology and removing manual, mundane tasks from people's lives so that they can focus on value-added activities. And so the transformation activity is really about not just the technology but what it can do for you, the value proposition and the business case surrounding that. And then ultimately it comes down to people and process. And people are hard to shift, and that takes some real experience and expertise in leadership and working with people to change the way they think about their work.
Absolutely. If I could ask you to be a sort of blue sky thinking futurist for a moment, you know, what's on the... You know, if data's on the horizon at the moment and that's sort of all, we're already there, but the advances in that space, what's a bit further beyond in terms of infrastructure?
Try and do it without saying ChatGPT.
Well, I must have to. AI's in there. But look.
We're already there. That's not the future. That's now.
In fact, this podcast is done by ChatGPT. I'm just speaking
for it.
I don't even need to record podcasts anymore.
No, that's right. You can just generate it. It's the one we talk about recently with our board is the metaverse, interestingly enough. So we often think of the metaverse as sort of a, you know, Facebook-style gaming environment. But actually, I think... if you consider water to be very visual, that is, when you open a gate and let water through, if something's stuck in there, you need to be able to see it to know. You can put sensors and things like that, but visual is really important. And we're seeing the metaverse as a way to potentially transport yourself, if you like, to anywhere in the state or in the country and be able to be there with eyes on, with measurement tools, which make you a virtual persona at that physical location without actually physically moving there. And so we're seeing that as a transformative way of operating our environment, removing people necessarily from having to go and operate things because you have to see it. That's one aspect. I think the other one that's really transformational is the commercialization of satellites. We're seeing Elon Musk launching these Starlinks, Amazon with Kuiper about to do the same. And the skies is going to be covered in satellites, which will change the way we can see what's going on, both in imagery and in measurement and in communications, and commoditize what has been difficult for people in the country to get access to. The more remote, the more interesting, but the more difficult to get access to. And we're just seeing a real shift, I think, towards ubiquity of communications and monitoring and visibility being the changing face of it. And I think the third one is AI, ChatGPT, but generative AI in general can, I think, you know, we're only at the cusp of the start of that, but the decision-making that we can make to optimise the way we use our resources in a resource-challenged world is going to be amazing. And I think that's what gives us hope that we can defeat the climate change challenge and resolve our water problems and our pollution and our resource overuse.
Fantastic.
It's a really interesting subject. I mean, the speed of change in that whole AI space is not years like we were saying before. It's literally weeks. There's something new coming out every single week. Even now you're seeing things like auto-GPT where multiple chat GPs are talking to each other, doing things. So you set the task off and say, go and find me a hotel somewhere up in the central coast, with make sure there's a winery close by and book the tickets for me. And it would often do that for you, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Which is... when you think about that in itself, that's just the beginning. Where we're going to be in a couple of years' time will be remarkable.
Yeah.
And that's, I find it quite exciting, actually.
There we go. Since you have the microphone, why don't you tell us about Meet Magic and about what you've been up to?
Well, look, I'm 40. When I was 46, 47, we were talking about this before, I'm 53 tomorrow.
Yeah.
I just saw the gap in the market for something different. The problem that we were solving was for charities to fundraise. I was a head of fundraising for a charity called Feel the Magic, and they were helping kids deal with grief when they've lost a parent. And I was trying to raise some money for James, and I just discovered how hard it was to just keep asking the same people over and over for money. So I thought there's got to be a better way. So I spent 20 years in tech sales, and so I always knew there was money in marketing for conferences and for lunches and for round tables and for all these different events that they were using to basically generate a conversation with someone that they can go and sell to. That was what they wanted to do. So I thought, I'm being from Nottingham, of course, the land of Robin Hood, I always know what to do with other people's money. So we thought, why don't we take that money off them for marketing, give them what they want, which is access to execs to have a conversation, and then we'll ask the exec which charity they support, and we'll give the money to charity. And that's what Meet Magic is. It's a little bit like... I was going to say Tinder for business, but just to make people understand what it is, it's a little bit more like Bumble for business, where the executive gets to choose who they want to meet with. And for every meeting they have, we donate money to charity. And we've generated about 2.5 million so far. One of our charities, we're a platinum partner with Starlight Children Foundation, and we've given them $1 million, which we're actually having a big announcement about that next week at our launch party. But one of the things that we've actually done and we've recognized over the past couple of years is the way people have changed in the way they connect. I think there's a lot of noise in the market for the execs. And Ian, you're probably one of the... this random question, how many emails do you get a day?
So many. I mean, and most I don't look at because they're the spam from vendors.
Right.
To things we're going, right?
That was completely off the cuff. And if you ask any executive today... they're inundated. If Ian Put, for example, is looking for a new ERP system on LinkedIn, every channel will be blocked. His Facebook channel, his YouTube, everything. So there's a lot of noise out there for the execs, but they still got to get the job done. They've still got to find the information, get access to the information so they can continue to do their job and stay ahead of the tech curve, because that is one of the critical things with it changing so fast is staying ahead. So we've actually built a platform that brings the two parties together. So on the one side, it's called a market network, which is very different to a sort of a marketplace. A market network is where you've got multiple sides coming together around one core. So we're the core, and we'll have execs on one side, vendors on the other side, and then eventually there'll be other things like BAs and business analysts and program directors and all the things that you would need to deliver a project on, all in one place. So it's become that, and the platform is all driven by AI, ironically enough. We're using matching algorithms to bring them together. So when Ian signs up and says, I'm interested in these types of technologies, on the other side, we match them based on Ian's preferences.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. How long have you been going?
It's a story. I could talk forever on this one, but the idea was sparked in 2017.
Yeah.
There was no revenue.
Right.
In 2018, I ran out of cash. I mean, if Andrew Mazak's listening, he's one of the CIOs of I think it was West Farmers at the time. He gave me some guidance on how to support the growth of a startup without having a job. But then in 2018, I had to go and get a job again. So I worked for the whole year. And then at the end of 2018, just at the beginning of 2019 almost, Starlight Children's Foundation, one of the board members came to me and said, I love what you're doing. I love the meetings that you've created. Can you help us raise some money? So we sat down and came up with this concept called Meeting for Good. And then the funny thing about droughts and waters and floods and stuff, it was the end of 2019. You probably remember the skies were burning. Everything was, koalas were falling out of the trees. It was it was crazy. So we had the drought where farmers couldn't feed their animals for weeks at a time, and they weren't having showers. So we were actually donating money to buy a bale at that time. And each meeting back then, I think the $700 bought 11,000 litres of water, which meant the farmers and their family could have a shower because they'd been giving the water to the animals so they didn't die. Mm. Crazy, crazy situation. But so 2019, I restarted it again. COVID hit, of course, in 2020. By 2020, we only had $20,000 that were given to charity. But in those two, after the 21 and 22, we've done the proverbial hockey stick from a venture capital point of view, where we've gone from giving $20,000 to charity to over $1 million. Mm. And we've gone from having 60 execs on board to over 1,000. Mm. So it's sort of done that. And then the platform now is 2023, and it's the scale mode.
It's very easy to sort of brush over the fact that you were raising a bit of money, so you thought you'd have a go at something. But why are you doing it? What's driving you?
Well, I think the purpose is, I think when I got to a certain point in life where it just wasn't all about the sales anymore and going out and drinking and doing the schmoozing, because that's what salespeople were doing back then. They probably still are, but it was all about, I just got tired of it. And I needed purpose. And it was actually Dimity Clancy, the Channel 9 newsreader, who introduced me to James, who was the founder of Feel the Magic, at his fundraising night. And it was that one night where I just got completely inspired, and I thought, there's got to be something better. And so I then met up with James afterwards and said, you know, make me a head of fundraising, because I know some rich people, and I'll find you some money. And I went and talked to some of my friends, and we found a few hundred thousand dollars. It wasn't a massive amount of money, but we couldn't keep going back and asking for more. So that's when my brain started going, how can I help James continue to do his mission? And so I then introduced him to the Growth Project, which was backed by Commonwealth Bank and Monica Saunders from the Saunders family. And that was where it's all kicked off from him. I started the Meet Magic process on the very first day of that. It just came out of my head. It's all based on the fact that I've been doing this sort of thing in the background. I had a bit of a side hustle of opening doors for people. They'd say, Carl, do you know somebody over there? I'd say, yeah. And I'd charge them $1,000 to open that door. That was my way of paying the school fees. And then I just started giving half that money away to the exec to make it easier to get into the exec's diary. And that's how it started. And here we are today in five countries, I think we are.
Fantastic. Congratulations. Let's bring it together then, because really the culmination of the conversation is, you know, what happens when you want to Meet Magic, and what's the benefit, and how does that all look, and, you know, why should people sign up? You know, the people who are listening to this, hopefully.
I mean, Ian's the best person to answer that. I mean, he's been an amazing support for us. I mean, 8 or 10 meetings or something like that, which is incredible. And the whole point of Meet Magic is it fits into the day and doesn't require any behavioural change. Mm-hmm. So it's meetings that were probably going to happen anyway. So we probably should let you answer that one, Ian, rather than...
Yeah, I think everything you've said though, Carl, resonates with me. Firstly, purpose-driven. I think we're all striving to find purpose in life beyond just making money and, you know, trying to feed the family, as you said. They're still important hygiene aspects. But I love the fact that what brings people together, that is the meetings that Carl's organisation creates, adds value to me as a tech buyer, but also adds value to Starlight Foundation or the charity that we're supporting, because the trade-off is my time for the marketer's money to establish that connection. They want it. They will go and, you know, give you tickets to F1 or to some other event, but actually I'm not really allowed to take those because that's the personal benefit. But to give up my time, that's free for me, and it's just a matter of prioritising it. And so I actually really enjoy it, because the benefit I also get back, apart from the purpose-driven benefit of Meet Magic, is learning. And so I'm always keen to be curious about what's changing, but I'm time poor. As we mentioned before, I get huge amounts of email with vendors all over the place wanting to meet, and it's them wanting to know about my business that they can find a niche, whereas if I'm more, I want to meet you because there's actually a good match here, and I'm willing to talk about where I think the opportunity is for you, and then for you to say yes or no, that's where our technology fits, then it's a better starting point. And obviously I do it anyway, without Meet Magic, but it's a good motivator to put that match together to align people that they really want to see, who they otherwise wouldn't get into.
So you're getting much better value conversations out of the people that would want to be selling to you anyway.
That's right.
You're not just, it's not just a one-way street of a sell. You're actually taking information from them and learning about what's going on in the industry and expanding your knowledge at the same time.
Exactly. And I mean, that's an ongoing role for any CIO to, you know, as we were talking before, technology moves so fast, you can't keep up with it. So your best opportunity really is to get a slice of enough of the areas of interest that your company pursues to get a good cross-section of understanding of what's happening.
Mm.
And vendors are awesome to do that. And to your point at the start, I think you said, how do we bring talent together?
Mm.
And the talent that I need is not always within my four walls. It's often outside and with experts who bring capabilities, not just products, because I don't only talk to product companies, but integration of products often, that expertise that I need to draw on to build what we need for the future.
It's a really interesting area, Paddy, because even as recent as last week, I had a conversation with Matt Ellis, who is the global head of engineering at Macquarie Bank.
Yeah.
He said he loves the idea, loves the concept. He's got his first meeting set up with the president of SnapLogic, no less, in the US, which is an incredible meeting about to happen on our platform. But he said to me, Carl, we have to have these meetings. He said, we can't not have them. He said the orders from the top of the company is that you must stay ahead of the game. Because if you don't, it's a huge risk to the business. As a bank, of course, if you get left behind the tech curve as a bank, the customers have gone elsewhere. So it's a really important thing, what Ian says about keeping up to date and keep with the skills. Most of our clients are all the top right-hand quadrant players who have done this before. It's not a mum and dad area. It's B2B, proper B2B. It's just a brand new way for the vendors to come and share stories, not sell, because we actually say no PowerPoints and no demos. I don't know if you get any PowerPoints and demos, but they shouldn't be doing that unless you've asked for it. But it's just a great way for them to keep ahead of the curve.
And then from so that's the benefit you're sort of getting on it from in terms of knowledge. But Ian, you already have a fantastic profile and you're very active and out there. But for people who are maybe not as well established in the industry as you, the other side of the benefit is incredible personal branding opportunity, isn't it? In terms of highlighting you doing something a bit different.
It really is. I mean, we were talking about LinkedIn earlier doing podcasts. And they're doing they actually told me that hiring managers now are looking at what you're doing outside as part of their hiring process. So this contributing back to society in any way is seen as a positive thing. And we're seeing, I mean, we had an onboarding call with Michael Ross, who's the chief technology officer of Qantas. I'm dropping names here like crazy, aren't I?
Pick them up.
It's mind-blowing to me because these are the people that are coming on board and supporting us. The Ian Robinsons of the world.
Yeah.
For me, it's a mind-blowing process of getting to this point. But Michael Ross says to me on the call, I think Michael's done 10 meetings, and I said to him, Ian, Michael, why are you doing them? He said, well, they feel good. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, every time I have one, I feel really good afterwards. He said, but likewise, when I turn one down, I feel bad. And I said, well, just don't turn them down then. Just keep doing them. So he's actually saying there's a mental health benefit that comes from the meeting. So once you've had a meeting, one of our meetings, you know that something good's going to come out of that. That makes you more productive at work, more engaged at work. Everything improves. So as a result, you can start to see that there's other benefits coming together just through networking and having a conversation. You're learning, you're growing, you're feeling better. There's no downside.
Absolutely. And I just want to sort of point out, we're talking about technology a lot. Obviously, that's your specialism, as well as being, in utilities and through the infrastructure space. But that's really the genesis, isn't it, for Meet Magic, is from technology and your connections in that space, and also even the platform itself.
Yeah.
But the whole point of us talking today is about you wanting to, or the fact that you are broadening your scope and the type of people that you want to get engaged on the platform.
Totally. I mean, we've been really successful with having the Ian Robertsons of the world, the technology leaders, and they basically set the benchmark and set the trend in terms of giving back and purpose-led execs. And we're now trying to expand. There's actually a big gap in the number of women we have versus men, which we can't work out why. There's obviously some reasons why women say no more than men, and obviously they're busy, and there's a whole lot of things that you get into.
Interesting.
Which I can't work it out, but we're trying our best to make sure that we invite just as many women as men to join us. Mm-hmm. But other leaders, like marketing leaders, I think there's, you know, everything from around finance and HR, because these are important. Think about HR and people and culture. Well, the clue's in the title, people and culture. The job is to develop people and develop culture. Well, what these meetings do is exactly that. It helps you develop your people and your culture. Mm. You have a culture of giving, a culture of purpose, and people feel good about, and they stick around. So that all of a sudden you've found something that actually keeps people in their chairs and not leaving. So it's good for everybody. So yes, the answer to the question is we're trying to expand, and I'm going to announce it here. We've just he's in hospital at the moment having an eye operation, but Rory Sutherland, who's the global chairman of Ogilvy, absolutely loves what we're doing, and he's agreed to be our global chief evangelist. So just brilliant. like Canva had Guy Kawasaki as theirs, we now have the godfather of advertising as our global chief evangelist, which is amazing. I'm very proud of that. So I hope Rory gets better soon.
Fantastic. He keeps popping up on my Instagram because you keep talking about him.
he is phenomenal.
But I'm glad he has, because he's awesome.
You watch some of the things.
Oh, incredible.
I've actually got a meeting after here with Nicholas Gruen, who Rory put me in touch with. Nicholas is one of the most chief economists in the country. He's very well known. So close friend with Rory. And we're talking about human behavior. We talked about data before. Lots of knowledge out there, lots of data out there, but it's the behavior that needs to change sometimes, not the actual data. So we're talking about the feelings, or the how do you reimagine what a meeting is without, you know, you say, let's have a meeting, your eyes roll because it's another meeting, but how do you make it so it doesn't do that? And that's where we're trying to get to. We're looking at the behavioral science around meetings.
Just go back to that McKinsey stat that we talked about before the podcast, because I think that really plays into what we're talking about as well, doesn't it?
Really interesting. I mean, I the fact that I've created something here that, one, gives back to charity, and right now ESG is on everyone's agenda. You know, the 17 development goals, everyone's got a role to play in that at some point. How do you do that? Well, you know, there's a whole way to do it. We found a way to just to make those development goals accessible for everybody that's in the company. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a long way to go. It's by no means perfect, but it's the beginning.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this podcast. It's been great talking to you both. Thank you for your time, and Ian, especially thank you for making time to come and see us in the city. And I look forward to following up with you. Well, I'll see you in the gym.
Pleasure, Paddy.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's actually interesting. I forgot the question you asked me before, so you can edit this out or you can keep it in. I don't really mind. I got all the way. What was the question that you asked? And I got to the point. I thought, what was the question he asked again?
Which one?
The last one.
McKinsey stats.
Oh, the McKinsey. Yeah, so I didn't.
I thought you handled it really well.
We're still recording, aren't we? We're not cutting the podcast here, but tell me about the McKinsey stat, because it's actually really important.
I had a complete mind blank. I started waffling off on a tangent, which I do really, really, really well. But this whole McKinsey thing, so when I talk about what we've created with the charity side of things, we created it 5 or 6 years ago. It's now popular. What we've invented with meetings is just starting to come into play, but we're already there with our technology. McKinsey last month announced that 83% of B2B decision makers prefer a digital human experience as their first meeting. And let's be fair, you know, if you're going to meet somebody in the coffee shop for an hour and you don't like them, you can't escape. But at least if you're on our platform,
you can wrap it up.
I'm sorry, I've got to go. My bandwidth's not working today.
you haven't touched your coffee.
It's coffee machine.
So it's becoming a thing. I think it's perfectly acceptable today. COVID gave us this. It's perfectly acceptable today to have a first meeting online, and then go and determine whether or not you want to do business together face to face afterwards or whatever. So we're hoping that this is the future.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think I mentioned to you guys, I mean, we're working with a major client at the moment, and their office is only 100 meters away, and yet we've had 4 meetings and they've all been online. So, you know, it is the way. And some people just prefer to do it that way because it's more efficient. You don't have to walk anywhere.
Well, I can tell you, we've got 14 people in our team, and the first 7 of them I never met for the first year and a bit, because we were all locked down. They're all in Melbourne and everywhere else, and every day we'd meet online. That's how we started.
I think we placed 60 people through the COVID lockdown period without meeting a single one of them. And we proved the possible. we proved the possible with that, you know, and still had high quality, you know, hiring processes.
And that you can build culture digitally. Mm. You can come together. You know, that's the team. We've got tools that do a whole lot of that stuff around me. I think we waste a lot of time in meetings. A lot of the meetings should have been a text or should have been an email.
I think one of the great things about online meetings has been the introverts have ruled okay.
Yes.
Because for the first time, you go around the table and ask, you want to speak, and whereas in normal meetings, they get shouted down.
Yeah.
I think there's been huge benefits for, particularly in my industry, lots of introverts speaking up and having a voice, and also remote people, not just 100 metres down the road, but you can do that as well. But people all over the countryside, the access to new labour sources is pretty awesome.
It's
really changed the game.
It really is. And I think what can be possible through a meeting is incredible. And I'll leave you with one thought here, and this is the reason why Rory's come on board, because he had the world's first meeting online that offset 300 tonnes of carbon. Now, think about that for a minute. Mm. The annual footprint of an Australian is about 15 or 16 tonnes for the year. So he's just offset 300 in one 45-minute meeting. So we've actually tokenised carbon offsets now. So let's just assume you're an Atlassian, for example. You've got 100 business leaders, and they have one meeting once a month. That's 30,000 tonnes of carbon that can be offset through various different projects, whether they're nature-based or whether they're tech-based, whichever it is. Over a year, that's 360,000 tonnes of carbon. That's the equivalent usage of 50,000 homes' energy usage for a year, or about 80,000 cars off the road for a whole year, just from meetings. So it's now, there's no excuse. You're having meetings that can now, you could literally jump in an Uber on the way to the airport, and before you've got there, signed up to Meet Magic and offset your annual carbon footprint before you've even got on that flight, which is going to burn fossil fuel.
How do people sign up to Meet Magic?
Meetmagic.org.
We'll put it in the podcast notes anyway. But guys, let's wrap it up.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate your time.